Good morning, this is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Deborah Howard, founder of the Companion Animal Protection Society, or CAPS. CAPS is self-described, you may recall, as, quote, the only national nonprofit organization dedicated exclusively to protecting companion animals from cruelty in pet shops and puppy/kitten mills, end quote. I interviewed Howard in late January, catching up on many of CAPS developments and inroads since our previous interview back in 2013. That January conversation was peppy and expansive and featured many listener calls and messages, so we didn't have time to discuss ways in which CAPS has broadened its mission over those 11 ensuing years. This includes efforts towards reforming shelters in California. CAPS is producing a short documentary, The Crisis at California's Municipal Shelters, as well as a more concerted effort toward national Latino outreach, placing spay-neuter PSAs recorded in Spanish as well as English on a significant number of Spanish TV and radio stations. I thought those topics and others were too important to remain unaddressed, so I invited Howard to return today for a conversational sequel of sorts in order to circle back to those subjects we missed. We'll have that conversation with Deborah Howard in just a moment here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Meanwhile, coming up later in today's program, I'll speak with Spencer Conover, Assistant Director of Pasco County Animal Services, about the Shelter Slumber Potty they're throwing this weekend. As the name suggests, this involves a sleepover event at the shelter with the animals of Pasco County Animal Services. The Slumber Potty will feature activities including a movie, a couple of meals, hang time with animals, and more. We'll hear all about the Shelter Slumber Potty. When Spencer Conover joins us a bit later in the show. Right now, though, let's get to our sequel conversation with Deborah Howard, the Companion Animal Protection Society, or CAPS, with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Deborah Howard back to Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Deborah.
Good morning, Duncan.
Thanks for joining us. Again, I guess, is the proper way.
I'm really excited to be back so soon.
Cool, me too. And as I noted there, CAPS has widened its mission. That's kind of what we're chiefly here to discuss today. Again, we ran out of time to do so in the last show. But I don't think it's wise necessarily to assume that everyone listening today was listening the last time we spoke. So I think we should maybe first just take at least a moment or two to address the CAPS core mission. So let's do a lightning round of Puppy Mills 101. What are puppy mills, and for those unfamiliar with these operations, what should people be on the lookout for when thinking about adding an animal to the household?
So, as you know, I started CAPS when I walked into a Dr. Pet Center franchise in November of 89, which was a chain of 300 stores. And most pet shops obtain their dogs from puppy and kitten mills, which are commercial breeding facilities that mass produce animals for resale in the pet shop industry. So most of these facilities are located in the Midwest, and they're licensed and inspected by USDA, which doesn't do a very good job. So, of course, we're also the watchdog for USDA. So we've gone undercover to more than 1,000 facilities, most of them USDA licensed and primarily in the Midwest. We've also been to multiple hundreds of pet shops in states all over the country. What we're mainly focusing on now is getting legislation passed to ban the retail sale of dogs, cats, and rabbits. And so that's why we go in and investigate the pet shops, find out where the animals come from, and then put together video exposés that we use to help get legislation passed.
So in case there might be some people that are hearing this description thinking, well, I understand it sounds like a serious effort's being undertaken and has been for many years, but what's so bad about the animals that come from these operations?
So they're raised in livestock conditions. Some of them are very, very large, may have thousands of animals. there's facilities that'll have 1,000 breeding dogs. We brought down a dog broker breeder in Minnesota that had 900 adult breeding dogs and 400 puppies, and our investigator worked there undercover. She not only bred the dogs, and she brokered other people's dogs. So the dogs live in very inhumane conditions for the most part, with a lot of filth and lack of veterinary care, and suffer from a variety of ailments and injuries, and very little, exercise or socialization. It's basically mass-producing animals to meet this demand for the sale and pet shops.
So it's the people that run these things, they're concerned about numbers, turning out as many dogs, as much profit as possible. They don't really care about the dogs the way most of us
to the show. Exactly. And as you know, dogs are social beings, and they want to be with people, and they want stimulation and exercise, and these dogs don't have any of that. I mean, some of them may have some play yards. They let them out occasionally. It is a requirement in the USDA, but it just means they have to have a certain amount of space, which is very minimal. The Animal Welfare Act oversees these commercial facilities, but the standards are very minimal, and they're woefully enforced. USDA does a horrible job of enforcing the Animal Welfare Act. I think the standards are minimal, but if they were truly enforced, I think a lot of puppy mills and kitten mills would no longer be in business.
Yeah, and I guess compounding our time management challenges, we could actually do probably a whole show about just the enforcement issue alone,
right?
Just because...
It's particularly bad right now. We were behind the Office of Inspector General report of 2010. We had a pro bono lobbying firm in D.C. for 8 years. We were trying to get oversight hearings. What we ended up getting is a hearing with the Office of Inspector General, which is the independent arm that oversees USDA. They did an audit and investigation on the basis of our meeting and all the reports we submitted. It was very, very scathing. It came out 4 years later in 2010. USDA sort of complied with it. One good thing that did come out of it is that we recommended that internet breeders be licensed, and they are. In fact, we have a documentary coming out in the next couple of weeks about online puppy sales. And since COVID, online puppy sales have really exploded.
So where I was going to ask you about that later, but this is as good a time as any. Where could people see that documentary?
We will have it on our website. It'll be on our YouTube, Vimeo, and we're going to have it, a link to it on our social media.
Okay.
It'll be coming out in probably a couple weeks.
Okay. So it'll be easy for people to track down. They don't have to pay for it or whatever. It's just like there'll be multiple options.
No, it's a short documentary.
Yeah.
And it's really important because during COVID, while there were a lot of people that were adopting from shelters, a lot of people were also going online and buying dogs and then coming to us and saying, my dog's sick, or it's not the dog I saw on the website. From a variety of sources, whether it be Craigslist or, Next Day Pets or puppies.com, which was Puppy Find. And so we investigated online sellers, which oftentimes are the same people that sell to pet shops, but not necessarily. Some of them are still unlicensed, as they shouldn't be. I've got four dogs here and everybody's acting up because all of a sudden I'm on the phone.
No, that's great. We as I've said 1,000 times, we invite dogs and any other animals in the background to speak up because it is talking animals. So they probably think, hey, she's talking. Why shouldn't I be talking?
We got a wrestling match going on here and a very vocal Puerto Rican basset hound with one eye.
Wow. Okay. Well, again, I hope they feel free at any point to add their 2 cents. So, but back to the online thing. So basically online thing, Craigslist, et cetera, those are just variations, I guess slightly more modern technology, in some cases reflections of the age old puppy mill difficulty, right?
Exactly. It's just like a pet shop, but it's online. If you go to puppies.com or Next Day Pets, you'll see a bunch of puppies, and it'll just be, hundreds of breeders. And we investigated, a number of breeders who were selling on puppies, who are or were selling on puppies.com. And then we've had, you know, we've had really sad complaints from Craigslist. People who bought dogs in California and the dogs came from Mexico and they died of distemper or parvovirus. So when you buy a dog online, chances are it is coming from a puppy mill. Because they don't screen you. They just ship the puppy to you across country. And some pet shops do this too. You buy a puppy, through the website, and then they ship it to you.
Yeah, so that brings me to a question that I had that I think also people listening might wonder about is, I mean, you can be leery of a pet store you don't know and where their animals come from, but the CAP's position isn't necessarily, correct me if I'm wrong, that pet stores or pet store chains are inherently bad. It's just that some individual examples are. But like, so if I go to my local Petco to get kitty litter, which I do, I'm not supporting an evil operation, am I?
Well, this is for another show, probably.
Okay, we're getting further behind. I thought we were getting caught up today. Now we've got two shows in the bank already, so.
Petco, and just briefly, Petco and PetSmart, while we support them providing space for adoptions for local rescues, do sell small critters and birds and fish.
Okay.
And that comes from another horrific industry. In fact, that's one of the cases I'm looking at right now for USDA. It gets a place called Sun Pets in Atlanta. A recent inspection report had 9,000 animals at this facility.
Oh, my goodness.
PETA worked there undercover in 2010. It is horrific. And the conditions are beyond, they're just, I can't even describe them. They're so bad. They continue to have violations. And this is a good example of why does USDA allow an operation like this to continue to stay in business?
Wow. So I guess then, really, if someone's figuring, like, you know, for whatever reason that they're not adopting to begin with, which, of course, they should be, but let's say that they're not and they're going to go thinking about purchasing an animal to add to their family, their household, whatever. I guess just basically a mom-and-pop thing that somehow can be checked out is, like, the only way to really go, if you are buying for whatever reason to begin with, to ensure that you're not getting into anything nefarious.
That would be true. I mean, we don't support people buying from breeders.
Right. So.
Especially since we're very invested now in saving lives from shelters.
For sure. But I just mean that if someone, we're going to not go online and say, okay, I'm not going to do a puppy mill thing, and you know, but I mean, the steps that they would have to take to ensure that, there's more steps than maybe they would anticipate.
Exactly. And I have to tell you, there's one woman in the documentary she lives in Arkansas. She took it upon herself to drive to Missouri to see where her dog came from and took video, and she was flabbergasted. It was a huge puppy mill, and she saw the big building and all the dogs coming in the outdoor runs. And she said she cried the entire way home.
Oh, geez. But I mean, good impulse for her to say, hey, I got to go check this out. Something about this doesn't smell right, or whatever prompted her to do that.
Right. And unfortunately, she had already bought the dog. There was another woman who actually got the red flags in time. She was, it was a place called Lucky Puppy Co. And it just made her very suspicious. And so she demanded a refund. And she finally got one. And the refund act did not come from Lucky Puppy Co. They, on the website, it looked like a couple of young couples that owned this place. It was actually owned by Select Puppies, which is one of the largest dog brokers in the country, that also had an employee who was part of the fraudulent rescues that were selling puppies in the California pet shops to circumvent the law that had passed there. So she did her homework and didn't buy the puppy. Was really surprised that this big brokerage facility was behind a facility that looked like it was a mom and pop operation.
Wow. Well, so I guess people would be well advised, among other things, to go to caps-web.org, which is your website for the Companion
right.
Animal Protection Society, and look around and get some other sort of tips and just general guidance. Again, the ideal thing would be to not even be purchasing any kind of animal under any circumstance, but if for some reason people have, and I often hear their reasons, and sometimes they're more convincing than others, but if you can't adopt, if you are going to buy, at least find out all the things that you should be aware of and trying to avoid in making that transaction. And
Well, as you know, we relocated to California a little over 3 years ago. So we got involved with shelter reform because I went up to Kern County Animal Services in Bakersfield, California. And we have, in a little over 2 years, saved 225 dogs from this high-tail facility. There are currently around 400 dogs living in two metal warehouses. I want people to think about that when they think about, I want to buy a puppy. I have to have this breed because it matches my personality or whatever. I have to have this breed because it's hypoallergenic. There really is no such thing as a hypoallergenic dog.
Yeah.
But
you hear that one a lot, though. Yeah.
So, you know, I have to have that Labradoodle.
Yeah.
There's a rescue for just about any breed out there. We've helped people find, you know, animals through Pet Finder. We have a page on Pet Finder. We created it for Kern County Animal Services. We get calls and emails every single day for people that want to adopt.
Yeah. Well, and also,
they're losing their lives. They're losing their lives all over California because we have such a horrible shelter crisis in the state. There's no reason to go and buy a dog or a cat.
Yeah. Well, I figured we'll circle back and talk more about Kern County Animal Services in a sec. But I think also it's worth noting that Pet Finder these days, and actually for some time now, has an incredible array of breeds. So the people that convince themselves that they have to have something breed specific, but also are looking to adopt if they can, that's another great resource to answer that riddle.
Exactly, and it's not. And people have this mistaken perception that it's all pit bulls. We love pit bulls. There's nothing wrong with pit bulls. They're great dogs, pit bull mixes. But you'd be surprised. Kern County Animal Services has small dogs. They don't have that many cats because cats are only taken in if they're sick and injured. But they have a lot of dogs. They have a lot of wonderful cattle dog mixes, huskies, husky mixes. They've had golden retriever type dogs in there, collie type dogs, small dogs, scruffy little terriers, chihuahuas. There was even a French bulldog in there.
Yeah. Well, so one quick question, then I'm going to get back to my other more serious questions. Did the dogs in your background there lose interest in the conversation? How come we're not here?
The Kern County dogs, Penelope and Dickens, went outside.
Okay.
I've got the Basset down right here. He's demanding. He's off the streets of Puerto Rico.
Wow.
If you think you can't get a purebred dog, I have a beautiful red and white spotted Basset hound here who was dumped on the streets of Puerto Rico for having glaucoma. He had a big, bulging, blind eye, and he was left on the streets, a Basset hound of all things, to fend for himself. So he was pulled by a rescue and brought up to Massachusetts, and he's our spokes model. He does work for us on social media. In fact, he's going to be doing a campaign about adoption that's going to be bilingual. That'll be coming out for National Adopt-A-Shelter Day, which is in May. His name is Bentley, and he's bilingual.
Wow. Well, that is one talented dog with a lot of great special abilities at the bottom of the resume as well. So that's very good. So I'm just seeing a text that came in and said, "Duncan, my girl Asia says puppy mills make me sick. Rescue, rescue, rescue!" with a big exclamation mark. So that's
good for that person.
That's one comment, and it looks like we got something else here. Let's see what this says. Let's say I wanted a pet snake or other reptile. Are there rescues? Or what other good practices to have one? Awesome show. Thank you.
They're asking about rescues for reptiles.
Yeah. Sounds like for snakes or reptiles.
That's definitely rescues for reptiles. And let me tell you, reptiles, you know, as I told you, these places like Sun Pets, they're breeding, brokering reptiles. There's a lot of reptile suffering in pet shops. We started to investigate pet stores in California that sold other animals other than dogs and cats. And, you know, we went into a place in San Jose. We had to report it to animal control. It was pretty bad. You know, we've seen some pretty bad conditions for reptiles and other animals.
Okay, so that I think that helps address that question. So anyway, so you started to touch on this. So let me ask more specifically. So what was the impetus for CAPS move into shelter reform in California?
Well, once I got to Kern County to pull a dog out of there, and I saw, and I couldn't believe it. I like, oh my God, these dogs live in a metal warehouse. And I went back and got a second dog. And at that point, I brought my phone and I decided, you know, we're going to put a plan together for them to market the dogs, because the shelter wasn't even featuring animals except maybe once every 6 weeks. They didn't know what to do with social media. They didn't know how to do videos.
So in what way, I'm just curious, sorry to interrupt, but I'm just curious, in what way was this a county shelter? It sounds like an operation that was at least as troubled as some of the puppy mill operations that we were discussing already.
A lot of California shelters, as I would find out later, are like that.
Okay.
So there's some really well-run ones here.
Okay.
There are some that look nice but have management and operational issues. So dogs are losing their lives because they're even being denied vet care, or they're only open certain hours, making it hard for the public to access the facility and see the animals. You know, Kern County, the Central Valley of California, is you know, has a lot of challenges,
yeah.
You know, crime and economics and so forth. So there isn't enough money given to the county to take care of animals. But I also think some of the issues in some of these shelters is, you know, how to manage the money and the funding in a way that would be most effective, and really learning how to market the animals, to move them, and learning the basic standards of care for animals who live in shelters. So it wasn't just Kern County, and we've, you know, again, started doing the videos, advertising on social media to get more people to see them, and all of a sudden we started saving animals. I have a social media director who's also our rescue coordinator. So we, when people come to us, we don't just, we interview them, we find they want us to go videotape the animals and see who they are with other dogs and cats. And so we do all that. We help coordinate transports. We've moved dogs up to Washington. A husky that was about to lose her life just got a wonderful home in Oregon. So it's more than just us featuring the dogs on Petfinder or on our social media. We actually work with these people to give the dogs, you know, the right homes.
And one quick question and one more longer one. Mm-hmm. Was that one of the Kern County dogs that we just heard adding our 2 cents?
That was Bentley. That was Bentley again.
Okay.
We have Bentley, Oliver, Dickens, and Penelope, and then two cats.
Okay. Well, by the end of the interview, hopefully I'll know which bark is who, but I'm not sure I can promise that. But
yeah.
But so did this move into shelter reform, in a sense, feel like just a natural outgrowth of the work you've been doing all these years in the realm of puppy mills?
In a way, I wasn't, you know, I grew up in California. I had no idea, you know, Massachusetts is very different. There's a shortage of dogs there. They have to bring dogs up from the South, from Texas, from Puerto Rico. A lot of New England is like that. I wasn't prepared for what I would soon see, and it isn't just Kern County. LA Animal Services right now, which has 6 locations, we have people in there videotaping for our documentary. They look like puppy mills. Mm. The enclosures are filthy. Dogs are drinking green algae water. They hose down the enclosures, and so it's just picture dogs sliding all over the place on concrete. And then they have crates in the hallways, because there's such an overpopulation issue right now in California, and nobody's cleaning the crates. The crates are filled with feces, and dogs are living in it. They look like puppy mills.
Yeah, well, that's why I wondered.
Won't do anything. They're having protests. They brought in a new director because the other one retired, and nothing has changed there. And this is the city of Los Angeles, which has money.
Wow.
But there's a number of other shelters, and we're interviewing people for this documentary. You know what? People are afraid. Even the volunteers are afraid. We have a complaint form on our website. If you're a shelter employee or volunteer, or you adopted or fostered or rescued, you can fill out our complaint form about California municipal shelters. You can agree to be in our documentary. A lot of people are too afraid to do this. they retaliate. These shelters retaliate, and they fire the volunteers. Or people are rescued, and they're afraid, well, I'm going to lose my poll privileges if I speak out against the shelter.
Wow. This sounds like all the wrong ways, forms of sort of intimidation and keeping people silent about things that they should be the most vocal about.
Right. And the goal of this documentary is that I have been in the trailer is out, and it's very, very upsetting. Because we not only look at the conditions in the shelters, and we have a veterinarian in there who was at Kern County who left after 6 or 7 months because they wouldn't listen to her. And, she went over to the city shelter, which is much better run. It still has a high euthanasia rate, but it's a lot cleaner and quieter and better managed. But she talked about the conditions and how she couldn't get the shelter to comply with her request for humane care of the animals. So the ultimate goal of this is to get state oversight. It's not ideal. You know, government agencies don't always do the best job, as evidenced by, you know, USDA and so forth. But at least there will be a set of standards, a set of regulations. New York passed such a law in 22. It goes into effect in December of 25, and they will follow the Association of Shelter Vet Guidelines. It's a very detailed, comprehensive set of guidelines for shelter care. And they're giving the shelters funding and training over a 3-year period. And their law isn't just for municipal shelters, it's also for private shelters and rescues. And the shelter association there, they were in support of it. I talked to the director. The problem in California is Cal Animals, which is the lobbying association for the shelters, doesn't want any kind of reform. All the good shelters stick together with the bad shelters. They all protect themselves, and they don't want any kind of rules or regulations for these shelters on the state level.
Just because they're worried about what actual enforcement would look like, because they surely, at least the good ones, must know the bad ones are really not, you know, the right place for animals to be under these circumstances. So it's weird that they're banding together to just resist any kind of oversight
Right, and we joined as a CAPS and auxiliary member, and when I started complaining about the conditions of some of these shelters, they refunded our membership.
Oh, that's a nice way of saying get lost, right?
Yeah, exactly. There needs to be, you know, there's a shortage of vets in the state, well, everywhere, but there's not enough spay-neuter. There's no regulation of breeding in the state of California. Texas, where we also do a lot of work, we've been investigating a lot of unlicensed facilities there and also all the pet shops. We're going through all the pet shops in the state because we're trying to get retail ban legislation passed there, too. Texas actually regulates dogs. If you have at least 5 breeding females now, similar to USDA, you have to have a license. California has no such law. There's so much rampant, out-of-control breeding and abandonment, especially in the Central Valley. Animals are just dumped everywhere. It is horrific. I have seen some horrible, horrible things. There's animal cruelty there's no funding given to it. The sheriffs don't enforce it. Animal control doesn't enforce it. The district attorneys don't prosecute it. There is horrific animal cruelty going on right now in the Central Valley of California.
Wow.
And it's left completely unchecked.
So this kind of guidelines that are being put in place would help with at least some of that, yes? Or?
Right. We'll have to start initially. This is a long-term project. I mean, we have to start initially with bettering the conditions of the shelters, having regulations in place, having regular inspections, having laws on the book so that at least if a citizen goes in there and sees inhumane treatment, they have something, you know, that they can report. That, you know, there's certain violations. But there also needs, so the next step would be to regulate breeders in this state. You have X number of dogs, you pay a fee, you get inspected. We need to make low-cost spay-neuter readily available. It's very hard to come by in many parts of the state.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, this is true, you know, in a lot of parts of this country.
For sure. Okay, so for people who might have just tuned in, I'm sort of overdue introducing you or reintroducing you. This is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you did just tune in, my guest is Deborah Howard, founder of the Companion Animal Protection Society, or CAPS. Again, self-described as the only national nonprofit organization dedicated exclusively to protecting companion animals from cruelty in pet shops and puppy kitten mills. Over the years, they've broadened their mission, which is a big focus of today's conversation. If you have a question for Deborah or would like to offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. Email dj at wnf.org or text 813-433-0885. So one of the emails that came in, Deborah, I already know the answer to, but I think it's worth in this conversation, especially because it's super local, to bring up. So this emailer is saying, does she know about the SPCA Tampa Bay partnering with Sunshine Puppies that sells puppy mill dogs? They sell them at SPCA for large sums of money. SPCA Tampa Bay also has the highest kill rate of any shelter in Florida. They're no longer helping the local community, but instead selling puppy mills. So the CE makes over $100,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
So
we were involved in investigating that.
Yeah, I thought so.
It's not happening anymore because of all the publicity. We work with the Tampa Bay Times and we work with the Fox Station. And there were a number of local animal organizations that were fighting it as well. What they were doing is they had been bringing in dogs from Pinnacle Pets, which is a dog brokerage facility, a very, very large one in Missouri. By the way, we also have an expose of breeders who sell to Pinnacle Pets, and that'll be up on our social media soon. But it's on our website. It's an investigation of Pinnacle Pets, so it shows the breeders, some of the breeders that sell to them. You know, breeders we've investigated.
Yeah.
They were bringing in adult breeding dogs from breeders who had sold to Pinnacle Pets. Pinnacle Pets sold to Sunshine Puppies, a pet shop. In Largo, that we investigated pretty much all the pet shops in Pinellas County. A couple opened after our investigation, and sadly, the commissioners grandfathered in all the pet shops and then instituted the ban. So, what the Tampa Bay SPCA was doing is they were bringing in adult breeding dogs, and then wanted to launch a program where they would make puppies available for adoption, supposedly lesser quality puppies. In the industry, it's known as B puppies. Be quality puppies. So there was just an outrage. You know, why would you do this when, you know, you have your own dogs whose lives need to be saved? They were also going to provide veterinary care to Sunshine the puppies in the pet shop. So there was such backlash. But, you know, before this even got announced, they had been adopting out these breeding dogs, and people were having problems with them because they weren't even fostering them or socializing them. Yeah. They were just bringing them straight from the puppy mills and then putting them in the shelter and immediately getting them adopted.
Wow. This sounds so bad. So we have a caller here. Let's get them involved. We'll get to some more of our questions for you in a sec, please. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Deborah Howard. Hi, go ahead, please.
But I'm an animal lover. I have three animals, and I can barely afford the vet charges. So why don't they go after people who do care about animals and have their own at home? I would even probably have one or two more if I could afford the vet fees. Why can't they have more affordable vet care for people who really do our best to keep my animals safe and healthy?
Yeah, I think that's a...
I have to agree with you. Vet care is very, very prohibitive. There's also a shortage of veterinarians in this country. We're not experts on vet care by any means, but one thing that should be done is I think that they should institute a program where your loans are paid off for veterinary school. They do this for doctors. There's a federal program. There's a state program in California. A number of states do this, too, to encourage them to work in lower socioeconomic areas. but low-cost veterinary care is very hard to come by. And there are programs for people of, you know, certain income where you can get help with veterinary bills. There are foundations out there and nonprofits that help with veterinary care, and we've found these types of organizations for people who have called that don't have the means to pay for veterinary care for very sick animals. But I have to agree, yeah, vet care is very prohibitive, so it makes it very hard for people to you know, keep animals healthy and to have more animals, you know, for example, like three animals, and you know, maybe they can only afford to have one animal. It's very expensive to take care of animals in this country. I have to agree, yeah.
Yeah. There's not, unfortunately, there's not a good answer to your question, but thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Bye. So, Deborah, just so we don't run out of time today, I'm going to circle back to Kern County, just because I think Kern County, it sounds like, is also sort of serves as a symbol for other things than just Kern County Animal Services. So, what happened there? Like, why did it go off the rails that much? Was it budget problems, leadership issues, policies, strictly finances? I mean, how did a place turn out to be what you described?
It's better than it used to be. They used to have a 25% save rate.
Wow.
I don't know what the numbers are now because, you know, I don't quite trust them. I mean, probably around 70%. You know, they have a lot of puppies because dogs aren't spayed and neutered there. So the puppies, you know, puppy adoption rate will be a lot higher. Brings up the numbers. I think it's a combination of all the things you mentioned. And it's also a county that where animals are just not important. I mean, there's a group of women called Friends of Abandoned Dogs that we work with, and they have a 60-mile radius, and they go out and feed animals. I went out with them. You'll see it in the documentary. It's in the trailer. I went out with them in the field in a town, Lamont. It's very poor. That's where your grapes are growing and, you know, almonds and so forth. And there were dead dogs littering the sides of the road. People just dump them and then they get hit by cars. Worse than that, they're poisoning them, either shooting them in the head and they're stuffing them in dog food bags. It's a weird phenomenon. I've never seen it anywhere else. And they're just left there. Animal control, you're lucky if they come pick them up. There was a whole barrel of kittens or cats that were poisoned. It was a commercial barrel. It was easily traceable. So one of the fad ladies finally went to the newspaper, and the director of Kern County just said, well, you can bring your cats to the shelter, which isn't true. You can only bring sick and injured cats and very small kittens to the shelter. It could have been investigated. I've written to the district attorney. I've written to the deputy district attorney in charge of the Rural Crimes Unit. I've CC'd the board of the health director, because these are also health issues. If you're dumping poisoned and sick animals on the sides of fields, along with there's numerous other things dumped on the sides of fields, vehicles and boats and televisions and everything else, you're polluting, you know, the food. So, you know, nothing, the district attorney did not get back to me. A most recent incident that just happened within the last week was a woman was riding her bike by the sheriff's shooting range, which happens to be in a large park, and witnessed two sheriff's deputies shooting a black cat.
Oh my God.
And she screamed and said, "What are you doing?" And they said the cat was damaging the property.
Oh my God.
The cat wasn't killed. Okay, the cat was suffering. We don't know what happened after that. There's supposedly now an internal investigation. The Bakersfield Californian has covered it. And you know what? It'll just stay in Bakersfield. I'm trying to get the LA Times to cover this right now because the whole state of California needs to know what is going on in Kern County.
Yeah.
The Sheriff's Department right now is under the auspices of the California Attorney General for numerous violations of civil rights of humans. But then you got deputies here that think it's okay to shoot a cat.
Oh, my God. Yeah, well, that just shows you how far.
That's why there's a shelter there with 400 animals and metal warehouses. Because to the county, the animal commissioners, the county supervisors, animals are not a priority.
Yeah. And so how do resources such as time and all the things you've just detailed that you've done and others under the CAPS auspices put towards this just Kern County, how does that affect CAPS and your other initiatives? In other words, do you have to pull resources away from other things, other missions that you have to do these things, or do you just kind of keep beefing up your team?
Well, yeah, no, it's we're adding, you know, we not just added the shelter reform and making this documentary and helping to save the lives of all these animals and marketing all these animals from Kern County. But yes, it has cut into our other resources.
Yeah, I would say.
And then the other thing, the really important project that came out of Kern County is when I went into the waiting room there, the lobby of Kern County, there was a whole wall of literature, and not one piece of it was in Spanish.
Oh, geez.
Their application is in Spanish, and their packet, when you adopt the animal, there's some Spanish in there. So we made, I feel very strongly about this. My mother was a first-generation Italian, but she was fluent not just in Italian, but also in Spanish. Mm. I was a volunteer with the United Farm Workers for 2 years. So this is an issue that is very, very important to me. Bentley is my second dog off the streets of Puerto Rico. We've tried to help dogs in Puerto Rico as well. So we created Spanish literature. The shelter wouldn't use it. They have some now, but they took it for some other shelter, and I don't know if it was a pride thing or what. They didn't want our name on it. I don't know. Mm. It took a while, but they do have that. They have listened to, you know, some of our recommendations. I made a shelter plan and gave it to them. So we have literature on spay neuter and vaccinations in addition to our already Spanish literature on pet shops and puppy mills. We have a brochure and a flyer, both in English and Spanish. And then after that, I decided it was really important we get this message out by television and radio. So we have spay neuter PSAs in Spanish and English. We brought in our public relations guy, who's been really great at placing our PSAs on television and radio. We brought him back. And the Spanish one is airing on 128 stations across the country and in Puerto Rico. We have many, many more stations to go. Unfortunately, I had to let him go because we had funding constraints.
Yeah.
Him back. It's such an important. We only have 8 English stations. We get calls. We get emails in Spanish from Puerto Rico. A lot of our calls are from California, from the Bay Area, which has very wealthy private shelters that apparently are not reaching out to the Latino population. And these people want to know, where should we go to spay and neuter? Where do we get low-cost spay and neuter in California?
Yeah.
But there's some stations in Florida. We don't have Miami yet. I think we have one station in Tampa, one in Miami, maybe. We don't have the big stations yet. We have a lot of coverage in Texas. We've had a lot of calls from Birmingham, Alabama, from English speakers for some reason. I don't know why there, but for the English ones, we're reaching out to lower socioeconomic markets. But our focus really is on reaching Spanish speakers with the PSA.
Yeah.
So that's been a really important project to us. And it's part of our national Latino outreach campaign.
For sure. Well, we're sort of almost at the end of our time, but I just want to let people know again, this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Deborah Howard, founder of the Companion Animal Protection Society. We're in our last moment or two, so if there's a quick call at 813-239-9663 or an email at dj@wnf.org, we'll try to incorporate that. I want to read a couple of emails that did come in just the last few minutes. One refers to the expensive vet care call and says, recommends SPOT, S-P-O-T, 62nd Avenue, North Pinellas Park, affordable pet care, vet care. So there's that. And then this, I think, is, you know, notable, and I think we should read it on the air. This emailer says, the show today should have had a content warning. The story about the black cat was the last straw for me as a listener. So I understand what they're saying. I think, you know, we're talking about some things that are super grim and grisly, mm-hmm. And I don't see how we could not do that. I mean, the cat story was, I think, particularly tough.
People don't need to know. You can't just cover your eyes. People say, oh, we don't want to see the graphic puppy mill images.
Yeah.
We don't want to hear about animal cruelty. I have to see this every day. I live with
sure.
this every day.
Well, and
people
also...
They need to know what's going on in this country with the treatment of animals. And I know it's hard to hear, and I know it's hard to see, but... It's images like that that get people motivated to take action. If we hadn't seen, you know, African-American protesters being, you know, hosed down and attacked by dogs, you know, those are horrible images to look at. We wouldn't have done anything in the civil rights movement. So it's very, very similar. I think we need to see these things to bring about change for animals in this country.
Yeah, and I think some of these things are so egregious and awful, and unfortunately we're out of time to discuss them in greater detail, but I think, you know, if it's a bit of a shock, that may or may not be the worst thing. If it gets people to think, oh my God, I had no idea this kind of thing existed in my state or in another state or just generally. So, I mean, maybe that will prompt people to
It should prompt outrage. It prompts outrage in me. I can't live with myself knowing that these things are going on, and we're going to do everything we can to bring justice to any kind of animals that are mistreated, that you know, are subjected to cruelty.
Yeah.
And to the people that you know, do these types of things.
For sure. So, Deborah, I'm afraid we are out of time, but we've been speaking with Deborah Howard from Companion Animal Protection Society. The website is caps-web.org. Great website, full of a lot of information. They also have great social media pages. Same story there. So you can find out a lot more about what we talked about and some of the stuff we didn't get a chance to talk about. You can probably see some of the trailers or initial products, eventually the whole thing of some of the documentaries that she discussed and more. So it's a great website, great resource, as are you, Deborah. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on again. We never have enough time, do we, Doug?
Well, no, but there's so much to cover, and you know, we usually get some good emails and some good calls, but the worst thing that happens, and we'll just do this again sometime down the road. So
I think Bentley wants me to get off the phone now. He's right at my feet here demanding attention.
Okay.
I think he wants a whole show just on Puerto Rican dogs.
or at least devoted strictly to Bentley, perhaps.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. All right. Thank you so much, Deborah.
Thank you again.
Appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
In a moment, I'll talk with Spencer Conover, Assistant Director of Pasco County Animal Services, about the Shelter Slumber Potty they're throwing this weekend. It's indeed a sleepover, also featuring games, activities, meals, and animals. More on that in a moment. Right now, we're going to step into the Comedy Corner with Eddie Izzard and part of a piece called Horse Whisper in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals on WMNF.
Horse Whisperers, very touchy-feely horse trainers. Oh, there, boy. Oh, how tall are you? 15 hands. Oh. You got 15 hands? You're a Martian? A Martian horse over here. Oh, I see, 15 hands, right. Glad we didn't measure it in feet. Everything's measured in feet except horses, which are measured in hands. What happened there? Someone should be... I'm 9 bottoms tall, you know. Really, are you? Yes. See that building? That's 29 bottoms high. He's 3 thighs tall. 4 kneecaps and a budgie gap. Horses measured in hands. What the f- Anyway, the horse whisperer is obviously, let's see. Horse is going, I can't quite hear what you're saying, actually. I tell you. What I said was, why don't you No, I still can't quite pick it up. Just seem to be going, horse shouters should get a lot further, shouldn't they? Walk forwards, you, walk forwards. Walk, or I hit you with this. Child.
That was Eddie Izzard in today's Comedy Corner with a piece called Horse Whisperer, taken from his album Live at Wembley. Now it's time to speak with Spencer Conover, Assistant Director of Pasco County Animal Services, about the Shelter Slumber Potty they're throwing this weekend. This is Spencer Conover back on Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Spencer.
Duncan, how you doing, man? It's good to be back. I appreciate it. Quite the honor.
No, we're happy to have you back, and it sounds like we got a fun, kind of cool event to talk about a little bit today. So how did this idea for the Shelter Slumber Party come about? Have you done it before?
So we have never participated before. One thing we have always prided ourselves on in the last couple of years is reaching out to our national partnerships, finding out what other shelters are doing, best practices, and looking forward to helping animals in really cool, unique, and innovative ways.
Sure.
We went to a conference last year, and there was this booth set up, and there were these people there in pajamas, and we were like, what the heck is going on? And it was this group getting set up for a slumber party, and they did it last year, and we were too late to the game. But we said, hey, we're not going to be late to the game this year. And we are really excited. Got signed up. We are excited to just feature the shelter in a new innovative way, raise money for animals, homeless animals in need, and kind of showcase what we do at the shelter. And so we're excited. It's a national organization that puts this on nationwide. There's dozens and dozens of shelters. But we are the only shelter in the state of Florida officially participating. So we're really excited about that.
Oh, that's cool. So in other words, a number of doing it at various locations all the same weekend?
Yeah, all the same day, April 6th, Saturday, into the morning of the 7th. And what it's designed to do is, you know, it's different for every shelter. You know, every shelter is basically, hey, set up a slumber party, figure out ways to engage your community in different ways. The way we're doing it, and once again, it looks a little bit different for everybody, but the way we're doing it is we're selling tickets for spots to come actually sleep at the shelter with the animals and experience what they experience in a night. So you're going to get signed up online. You can go to our website or our Facebook group, www.mypasco.net/PAS for all the information. We are going to get it kicked off Saturday around 4 o'clock. And the cool thing is, you're not just coming in and going to sleep. You're going to have tons of great activities. You're going to learn about the shelter, learn about some of the great animals that are in our care, and learn about some of what we do at Pasco County Animal Services. And it's all based around fundraising for the animals. Everybody that signs up, your donation goes directly back to the animals. And the sooner you get signed up for this Saturday, the sooner you can get working on fundraising for the animals in our care. Everything is in partnership with our 501c3 partners, Friends of Animal Services, Inc., and we're really excited to partner with them on this, but it's going to be a really cool, unique experience for everybody involved.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it. So what are some of the highlights of the time that if someone does say, yeah, I'm going to get in on this, I'm going to sign up for this, what can they expect to have happen?
Yeah, one of the coolest things, obviously, is just being at the shelter after dark. You know, a lot of people, you know, they'll come to our shelter, they'll visit with the animals, and then they go home. What really happens to those shelter animals at night, right? What do they experience? What do they go through? And so it's going to be a really cool experience just to be at the shelter at night. You know, obviously the good lights are not all going to be off, but there's going to be low lighting. And, you know, it's going to be experiencing what the shelter animals experience and being able to build that empathy, not only through themselves, but through their relationships with the community and help fundraising and their friends and family and their social media and getting folks to donate to the shelter and really experience that. Outside of that, we have amazing volunteers signed up. We have our volunteer coordinator who's arranged incredible activities all day. We're going to be building enrichment for the animals. We're going to be witnessing a live dog-to-dog play group. We're going to be having a movie on the lawn. There's going to be tons of great activities from 4 all the way up until 10 o'clock at night. Lights out at 10, and we actually have a catered dinner that's coming in that is being sponsored and donated through our 501c3 partner, and we have a breakfast that's going to be sponsored as well. So a lot of really great activities happening.
That's great. So how would people find out more about this or sign up for it online or otherwise?
Absolutely. You can sign up. The event is on Saturday, and you can sign up for a ticket. We have availability in our showroom and in our adoption center. We have actually assigned areas where people are sleeping. And where you donate for your ticket is based on where you're going to sleep. We have adopt availability in our private showrooms and our adoption center. You can get signed up all the way through Friday night. But the sooner you get signed up, obviously the sooner that you can start fundraising and get your spot locked in. But you're going to go to our website, www.mypasco.net/PAS, or you can search Pasco County Animal Services on Facebook. And we have all the information there. We are so excited to partner with our community. Tickets are selling fast. We have up to 25 slots. And so we are hoping to sell out before Friday. So if you're interested, please hop on our website today. We're really excited to get everybody out there.
Sounds like a blast. Let me ask you a totally unrelated question that's a carryover from our other interview we did earlier today on the show. Someone wanted to was talking about it, and I wanted to ask you, is it true that Pasco County does not take in cats?
So Pasco County Animal Services, in our ordinance, the word cat rarely exists in our ordinance, and we do not have a leash law for cats, which means cats are allowed to roam free. And so in our ordinance, we have the ability to impound cats that are sick or injured, if they're underage, if they're elderly and in need of care. But traditionally, Pasco County does not take in free-roaming cats because they're allowed to roam free. What we do is we provide services like spay-and-neuter services, trap-neuter vaccinate return services, vaccination clinic. We can tip ears to indicate that animals are altered. We have tons of great programs to help cats in our community, but we're not taking in stray cats like we would with stray dogs.
I got you. Okay, Spencer, Well, thanks so much for joining us today, and good luck with the potty.
Thanks so much. Really appreciate it, Duncan. Hope to talk to you soon.
All right, likewise. We just have reached about the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. Again, Slice of Life, the wonderful show hosted by Randy Zimmer and others, up next. After that, we get back to music with Jim Bannon from 1 to 3 and Nancy C from 3 to 6. And then our great Latin music kicks in. So we'll be back next week with another edition of Talking Animals featuring writer-director Mark Hamilton. director of Raptors, A Fistful of Daggers. That's coming up on PBS Nature documentary, two-part series. It's Talking Animals, WNF Tampa. Thanks.